May I have your attention, please? Will the real Dick Cheney please stand up? I repeat, will the real Dick Cheney please stand up?
Arena, they heard a problem here.
Y'all act like you never seen a Republican before. Jaws all on the floor like Osama himself just burst from the door. Kicked America's ass even worse than before. That's okay, gives me an excuse to go to war. Who do I bomb today? Iran, North Korea, maybe Uruguay? Wait, he just said gay? That's a sin, right? Well, yeah, if my base gets his way, except with my daughter, then it's okay. Yeah, I probably got a couple of screws up in my head loose, but it no worse than what Mummy do in the Abergrave torture room. Working people all love me. Chicken, 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 Dick Cheney. Look at him, we need him in his undisclosed location. Yeah, the man is our salvation. Plus the big dick in me vibration. Yeah, I'll throw a missile your way and put my big Dick Cheney on display. See, y'all are suckers. I send your kids to fight and die in war so I can get rich while you stay poor. But I skip, nah. Keep my ass alive. I got the Furman's count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you know I'm taking from Halliburton's got you hurting because it's coming out of your pocket. It ain't in my wad. I don't give a damn if you got a job or a home or a family or a son or a daughter. I certainly don't care if you got clean water. And my voting machine's there, made to order. So if you feel like I feel and want to rig the vote, come on, all you corporate hoes, sing the chorus. And it goes, I'm Dick Cheney, you sound the real Cheney, or you other Dick Cheney that just imitating. So won't the real Dick Cheney please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up. I'm Dick Cheney, you sound the real Cheney, or you other Dick Cheney that just imitating. So won't the real Dick Cheney please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up. John Kerry don't got a lie to run a campaign. I do. Swift vote him and swift vote you. You think I give a fuck about your job security? Half you gonna vote for me anyway, no matter what you're getting paid. Look, I got this magic trick called distraction. I'm all, look over there, Saddam Hussein. Meanwhile, let Osama get away so he come back attack on all day. And you say, Dick, we need you, say. And I say, well, if you feel that way. And you say, take away our civil liberties. And I say, well, if I got to say please. And that includes your 9/11 families who keep bitching about on red PDBs. Yeah, I'm sick of all y'all dissent groups and you protest groups. I'm gonna get Ashcroft to arrest you. See this Uncle Bob?
Welcome to Bread and Roses. I don't know whose song that was. That was the real Dick Cheney, some really bad rap. I'm Carol Scholl, your host tonight for Bread and Roses. We'll be here till 7 p.m. And tonight's topic, unsung heroes. Black youth speak up for equality and justice. We'll be talking to women, African-American, young African-American women who are involved in activism here in Portland. We'll also be listening to some tributes of Coretta Scott King from Maya Angelou. And if we have time, we'll also put on Atala Shabazz, the eldest daughter of Malcolm X, her tribute to Coretta Scott King. That's all coming up on Bread and Roses. And actually, I have some program announcements, actually. This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Children's Theater, presenting the world premiere of The Giver, the story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, 12th, 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium, 222 Southwest Clay. Tickets at 503-228-9571 or Ticketmaster.com. Appropriate for ages 10 and up. Information about The Giver at octc.org. This program has also been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from, in other words, Women's Books and Resources, serving you from its new location at 8 Northeast Killingsworth at Williams. In other words, is your local nonprofit feminist bookstore and resource center offering community space, gifts, tools for the revolution, women's writings, and much more. 503-232-6003 or, in other words, .org. Stay tuned for Unsung Heroes.
No woman take care of me until you can take care of myself. So hold back in a woman.
Listen up, ladies. Let me tell you the real deal. You must stand for something or fall for anything. Listen up, ladies. This is a new day. Listen up, ladies. Hear what I got to say. You're somebody's footstool. How you going to get respect? Playing the role of a fool. I know they say a grown man is ought to between water and sea.
Listen up, ladies,
this is a new day. Listen up, ladies, hear what I got to say. Listen up, ladies, this is a new day. Listen up, ladies, hear what I got to say. Listen up, ladies, enough is enough. Who said you got to take all this macho stuff?
Say what?
Just don't make no sense, I just don't understand. The price women pay to have a no good man. Sisters in suffering, enduring, unnecessary pain. Are you gonna ever win playing a man's game?
Yes, mommy, yes,
wake up, women all over the world. It's time to see the light. We got what it takes to get our way, morning, noon, and night. So listen up, ladies, this is a new day. Listen up, ladies, hear what I got to say.
Yes, mom, yes, mom.
Listen up, ladies, this is a new day. Listen up, ladies, hear what I got to say.
This is Bread and Roses. Tonight's topic, African American History Month, and we're talking to young women in Portland about their experiences and what they think of Black History Month, who inspires them. And half past the hour, we'll do a little tribute to Coretta Scott King with Maya Angelou. And if we have time, a speech given by Malcolm X's eldest daughter, Atala Shabazz, at Coretta Scott King's funeral. So here in the studio, we have a little crowd. We have Niani Norman, if you want to say hello.
Hi.
Niani is an amateur photographer and a youth advocate. And we also have KBOO's own Nubian Queen Miriam. Hello.
What's up, Portland? How are you guys doing tonight?
And and we have the children.
Yes, I brought my little tribe with me. It's two this time.
Okay.
There is Lotus. Can you say hello, Lotus?
Hello.
And there is Miss Princess Dionysus. Can you say hello?
Okay. So during this show, if you have any comments and you want to call in, please be sure and do so. We'll be on the air till 7 o'clock. 503-231-8187. Again, the topic, African History Month, Black History Month. And I did want to mention Black History Month, how it got started. Actually, Black History, Negro History Week has been around since 1926, and a historian by the name of Dr. Carter Woodson is responsible for it. He got his PhD from Harvard, but was a little upset that there weren't any books. History books actually ignored Black America, and it wasn't until the 20th century, so it hasn't been that long, that people have even been looking at Black history. Back in 1976, Black History Month started to be officially celebrated in many communities across the country. So the kids are being very good, nice and quiet. So Niani and Nubian Queen Miriam, what are your feelings about Black History Month, and what do you think of the celebration, that sort of thing? Whoever wants to go first here.
Niani. Well, I pretty much grew up on a farm. So for me, Black History Month was not really celebrated. I grew up in Estacada. So by the time we got to Estacada, my family was pretty much the only family of color in Estacada. And in school, it wasn't, like, I never had Black History Month. So I'm sure there was Black History Month, like, without a doubt. Black History Month goes on around the world anyway. But it wasn't something that was instilled in me in school. And so it was always something that when I was growing up, my mom taught us at home. We had books about Black history and everything. And I thought that that's how it was supposed to be. Like, I didn't realize that Black history was supposed to be something that happened in school until I got older, like high school. And I started to realize, man, then we're not learning anything in here. Like, we learned about the same two or three people, Harriet Tubman and, you know, Sojourner Truth a little bit. They'll touch on Sojourner Truth just a little bit, not too much, you know. And then, of course, some of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, and that was pretty much it. And so pretty much most of the kids that I went to high school with thought that that was the only part of Black history. You know, like I would tell people all the time, like, didn't you know the first person who created the traffic light, the automatic electric traffic light, was a Black person, like an African-American man, or the first home security system was invented by an African-American woman? Like, these things didn't come about until someone in our history created them, and it wasn't, you know, the regular face that we see for history in America. And so I think it's really important, especially Coretta Scott King was a very inspirational person to me, and I cried for so long when she passed, you know, because it affected me in a way of knowing that part of my history was going to be forgotten, because since it's not in the schools and it's not a subject that seems to be extremely important, then it's something that people my age probably will take for granted and not understand as much or as well or fight for it as hard as they should, because it's not something that was instilled in our youth. And so that's my mission.
Okay. And Nubian Queen Miriam.
Wow. Black history is very dynamic. There's so many people who have led a path. And as far as I, in high school, like Niana said, it wasn't touched on. It wasn't like the major part of history. You know, you got bits and pieces of Coretta Scott, and you got bits and pieces of Martin Luther King, and you got bits and pieces of Malcolm X. But at the same time, it wasn't like the base of the subject. I got to really understand it fully in effect when I was in Atlanta, Georgia. That's Georgia. You know, that's where the history, the Malcolm X, you have Martin Luther King, you have, oh man, you have all the history there. And that's when I came into effect to know about who made the first stoplight and all those incredible inventions that were created by us. And I'm influenced by how of a powerful people we are and how incredible intellectual we are in the history of Black history, and how I know, and that I know that in order for one to be actually free within our history, we have to be free within inside ourselves. We have to free our mind in order for us to be free within Black history. And I feel that those who led the path have given us that opportunity to be free and to blossom into incredible Black people. And I'm very proud to represent Black history and to participate.
503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the discussion. We've been talking about education and what kids learn in school. And I'd have to agree, I also work with older adults and younger adults in a school. And it breaks my heart to see the Black youth come through who don't know a lot about their history. And I actually work with at-risk adults and youth. And, you know, would it have changed the way the actions they have taken if they had more pride? And, you know, as a community, are we teaching people what they should know, that sort of thing? So, what about some of the influences, the people that you've both read that, you know, for our listeners who probably could use some, maybe could use some education, or would like to share with their children stories of different people? Do you have any?
Wow.
Anything? Yeah. Yeah. You have a long list. You have these.
Yeah, I have. I checked out a book at Mount Hood Community College where I attend classes at, and I was like, you know, I'm always interested in my Black poets and the life and the experiences that they have. And let's just say three favorite poets that I feel to connect with is Audre Lorde, incredible, incredible woman. I feel that she's still alive within her own rights, she's still alive because of her poetry, because of what she has written, her lifestyle, what she has been through as a poet, you know, attending college and the differences, the dislikes of her her lifestyle. She has really inspired me in that way. Woman on woman, or man on man, woman on man. But she's really, really an inspiration to me. Also, there's Sapphire. She is incredible. Her background, the things that she tell in her poetry are so, so real and so visual. There's one book that's called, I believe, Black Wings. And me by reading that first poem is almost like daring to keep going on, because it's like she takes you in areas that are dark and that are secret or so intense. And she is a very intense writer and a very visual writer, and I enjoy reading her poetry, and it's just incredible. Her wording is just incredible. And another person is, of course, Maya Angelou, Wisdom of All Wisdom. She inspired me. I wrote my first poem reflecting that if she could do it, I could do it, you know, and that was just putting it down on paper, you know what I'm saying? Everyone says, well, you don't have to rhyme. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to make it be like sense. Just flow with it. And I did. I flowed with it, and I made that poem, and it just continued me to be inspired by different African-American women in the poetry scene. But those are the three, and there's so many more. Mm-hmm. There's so many more that I'm really happy and are really proud to read their poetry.
Do we have a caller online? The number to call if you'd like to comment and give us some reading material, 503-231-8187. Lauren, are you still on the line?
I am, yes.
Yes.
I want to say hey to Niani. It's Go-Go.
Hey, what's up, girl?
How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to make a comment when you both were talking about how education isn't addressing Black history, and I work in a high school. I am an educator, and I totally agree it's not being addressed. And when it is being addressed, it's being addressed like dates and names, mm-hmm. and not meaning.
Mm-hmm.
But, so when we're talking about Black history, we're not talking about what it meant. We're talking about, like, what were the events that happened.
Right.
And I think it's a really shallow approach to teaching Black history.
Mm-hmm.
I had a class in college that really moved me, and when I do teach, I try and think of the professor that I worked with and how he taught, and one of the things that he had us do was to... we had to do a role play in which both parties were Blacks in sit-ins, and one person had to be the person that was going to serve someone who was going to come and sit down. And so both people have to think about, how is this going to impact me? Like, I'm going to lose my job if I serve this person.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person is thinking, you know, my people will never be free unless we sit down here now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not, you know, and then everybody in the class is thinking about what this meant. And it's not just like, you know, sit-ins happened, and here's,
yeah.
Right, here's what happened. It's like, here's what happened, and here's why. And it's a lot more complicated than, you know, an event or a day or a photo can really portray, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that more of the meaning of it was being taught in school and less of just the events and the days and the people's names.
Right. Yeah, Lauren, thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
And where do you teach at?
Century High School in Hillsboro.
All right.
Well, it's a great school, so I have to say what's up to Century High School. And the Audre Lorde book, Black in that Corn.
Oh, yes.
Can
yes.
you say...
Okay, have a great night, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye.
The number to call, 503-231-8187. And Niani, how about you? Different influences?
Well, first I would just like to say something about what Lauren said. I really think, like, it's true that we just get, you know, dates and times and names of people that happen. And so... you always learn when you're in school how to be a really proud American, you know what I mean? Like, you're so proud of your history because you know about all these really wonderful things that happened and all these wars that were fought and how people struggled in the wars and how many people died at Bunker Hill, you know. So you get this really huge sense of, I'm really proud to be an American. And so I think that definitely in schools it's so important. Like, how do you get people to be proud to be black youth? You know, I'm proud to be black youth and I'm really proud of my history and I want to share it. You know, so I think that's, but definitely people who inspire me, hands down, Maya Angelou, just based on the fact of things that she went through. And she had the potential of becoming a seriously outraged person. And she had the potential of becoming, you know, one of those weapons in society that, you know, could have, she could have been at risk. She was definitely an at-risk youth. And she had the passion to struggle and to fight and to become an amazing, amazing woman that I, in my whole lifetime, hope that I could even be half or a portion of the woman that she is. And the second woman that inspires me as a writer and as an artist and as an empowering person is Iyanla VanZant. She is amazing. She is a person who, whatever book you pick up of hers, like you finish it and you feel like a totally inspired person, like a totally new, strong woman, and a totally new, strong woman of color, because she is definitely a woman who empowers women of color and should be recognized, you know, 10 times over. And as a theatrical person, Morgan Freeman is my favorite. I feel like in Hollywood and in, you know, the industry of entertainment, he keeps his values of, you know, of who he is and of what he is and isn't willing to do in order to become, you know, famous or in order to sacrifice, you know, who he is. He keeps it real all the time, and I'm just always so impressed with his work, and it inspires me as a person of color to know that I don't have to, you know, have a sex scene with Billy Bob Thornton in order to get an Academy Award. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to go and show my body to the world in lewd ways when this guy is just like doing it. You know what I mean? Like, he should have been given, you know, a million Academy Awards for just about every movie he's been in. And so he inspires me a lot. And so
this is Bread and Roses, and if you just tuned in, we're talking about Black History Month and how it is or is not celebrated. We have two women in the studio, Niani Norman and Nubian Queen Miriam, who both be performing tomorrow night. So if you enjoy what you're hearing, come see the Black Youth Speak Up for Equality and Justice, Unsung Heroes. That's tomorrow, Saturday, February 18th, 7 p.m. at Bread and Roses Center. And the address is 819 North Killingsworth. That's Bread and Roses Center, tomorrow night, 7 p.m. If you want to come early, they have a soulful Southern buffet at 6:30 p.m. This is a very low-cost event, so come get inspired. It's, again, and see what's happening in our community. These are voices that we really don't hear in the Oregonian, and we don't hear them on the news. So stop by, and this is really what's happening in the community. Some of the books that artists and authors that have been talked about, Audre Lorde, Sapphire, and Maya Angelou. And, you know, check out the books over at the Free University of the Multnomah County Library. And let's educate ourselves and each other. And I'd like to actually do a little tribute to Coretta Scott King. We have a recording of Maya Angelou's speech that she made at the funeral, and I think that'll be real inspiring. And I'm hoping after that we can hear some poetry from Nubian Queen Miriam and hear some more from Niani Norman.
I open my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back, no. I will go. I shall go. I'll see what the end is gonna be. In the midst of national tumult, in the median of international violent uproar,
Coretta Scott King's face remained a study in serenity. In times of interior violent storms, she sat, her hands resting in her lap calmly, like good children sleeping. Her passion was never spent in public display. She offered her industry and her energies to action toward righting ancient and current wrongs in this world. She believed religiously in nonviolent protest. She believed it could heal a nation mired in a history of slavery and all its excesses. She believed nonviolent protest religiously could lift up a nation ripe with racial prejudices and racial bias. She was a quintessential African-American woman, born in the small town, repressive South, born of flesh and destined to become iron, born a cornflower and destined to become a steel magnolia. She loved her church fervently. She loved and adored her husband and her children. She cherished her race. She cherished women. She cared for the conditions of human beings, of Native Americans and Latinos and Asian Americans. She cared for gay and straight people. She was concerned for the struggles in Ireland, and she prayed nightly for Palestine and equally for Israel. I speak as a sister of a sister. Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated on my birthday. And for over 30 years, Coretta Scott King and I have telephoned or sent cards to each other, or flowers to each other, or met each other somewhere in the world. We called ourselves chosen sisters. And when we traveled to South Africa or to the Caribbean, or when she came to visit me in North Carolina or in New York, we sat into the late evening hours calling each other girl. Now, it's a black woman thing, you know. And even as we reached well into our 70th decade, we still said, girl. I stand here today for her family, which is my family, and for my family and all the other families in the world who would want to be here but could not be here. I have beside me up here millions of people who are living and standing straight and erect and knowing something about dignity without being cold and aloof, knowing something about being contained without being unapproachable. People who have learned something from Coretta Scott King. I stand here for Eleanor Traylor and for Harry Belafonte, and I stand here for Winnie Mandela. I stand here for women and men who loved her. Dinky Romilly. On those late nights when Coretta and I would talk, I would make her laugh. And she said that Martin King used to tell her, you don't laugh enough. And there's a recent book out about sisters in which she spoke about her blood sister. But at the end of her essay, she said, I do have a chosen sister, Maya Angelou, who makes me laugh even when I don't want to. And it's true, I told her some jokes only for no mixed company. Many times on those late afternoon evenings, She would say to me, "Sister, it shouldn't be an either or, should it? Peace and justice should belong to all people everywhere all the time. Isn't that right?" And I said then, and I say now, Coretta Scott King, you're absolutely right. I do believe that peace and justice should belong to every person, everywhere, all the time. And those of us who gather here, principalities, presidents, senators, those of us who run great companies, who know something about being parents, who know something about being preachers and teachers, those of us, we owe something from this minute on, so that this gathering is not just another footnote on the pages of history. We owe something. I pledge to you, my sister, I will never cease. I mean to say, I want to see a better world. I mean to say, I want to see some peace somewhere. I mean to say, I want to see some honesty, some fair play. I want to see kindness and justice. This is what I want to see, and I want to see it through my eyes and through your eyes, Coretta Scott King. I open my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back, no. I will go. I shall go. I'll see what the end is going to be. Thank you.
There's an old friend that I once heard say something that touched my heart. And it began this way. I was born by the river in a little tent, and just like the river, been running ever since. He said it's been a long time coming, but I know my change is gonna come. Oh yeah. Thank you.
was Aretha Franklin, A Change Is Gonna Come. Before that, we heard Maya Angelou. That was a speech that she gave at Curtis Scott King's funeral. And you too can listen to that on the internet if you have that capability. It's a free and legal download at AmericanRhetoric.com. Or you can do a search for Maya Angelou and Curtis Scott King, and that'll come up. It's a wonderful, wonderful tribute. And there's some other speeches from the funeral that are well worth listening to. And I just remember the pictures of George Bush sort of squirming in the background when Maya says that, you know, peace and justice belong to everyone all the time. And she's quoting Coretta Scott King on that. While that song was playing, we have in the studio Miriam Anubian Queen and Niani Norman, two black youth, who are going to be participating in tomorrow's event at Bread and Roses Center, 819th North Killingsworth, at 7 p.m. And the event's called Unsung Heroes, Black Youth Speak Up for Equality and Justice. But you guys were talking a lot about the poems and the stories that need to be written, talking about internalized racism. I don't know if you want to share a bit of that conversation, of course, and then we do have to hear some poetry.
Okay. Internalized racism to me means that at this day and time, racism knows no color. You know, everybody is within the racism. And as far as the whip being cracked, it's cracked at everybody. It's not cracked at the black folks no more. It's not cracked at a certain Latino. It's not cracked at white folks no more. It's cracked at everybody. We're all in this together. And I feel that in order for us to come together to reasoning, it's for us to, as what you just said, is that justice and peace is for us. It belongs to nobody. It belongs to everybody as one. And that's how I feel. And it's coming from, you know who, Nubian Queen Miriam.
And Yanni?
Well, I think internalized racism to me is... you know, it's kind of along, you know, like kind of just the same as internalized homophobia for a person who is a sexual minority, and they get that internalized homophobia of no one has to tell them anymore, no one has to tell you anymore how that the way you are is wrong or bad or dirty or less. It's there inside of you, embedded in you, and so when you are a person who, you know, this day and age, who is a youth and you're sitting in your class and you are wondering if it's okay that you're not learning about your history, something's going to hit, you know, it's going to trigger inside your mind and say, yeah, this is not important. This is something. I mean, listen, you know this already. We've gone through this for, you know, what grade are you now? Ninth grade? You know, we've told you this from the time you came to kindergarten or preschool. This isn't important. And so at that point, you know, a youth is going to make the decision, or a person is going to make the decision of whether or not to speak up for something. You know, you walk into a store and someone's following you, and again, that trigger comes up that says, you know, this is how it's supposed to be. You walk into a store, you get followed. We know you're going to steal something, so we, you know, we look at you, and then you leave and you go about your regular day, because now racism is something that, you know, it's the age-old saying of, you know, if you keep a lion in a cage long enough, you can take away the cage, and the lion, you know, isn't going to go anywhere. You know what I mean? He's just going to stick around. You know, you beat a dog enough, that dog's going to lap it up and love you anyway if you just keep, you know, putting enough food in front of him every day. And so I feel, you know, as a person of color, every day people, you know, we just get just enough. You know, we get Black History Month, the shortest month of the year. But we're all happy that we have a whole month, a whole entire month to celebrate our history, to be, you know, to honor our history. And on TV, once a month, once a year, you know, for 1 month out of the year, everybody's like, oh, you know, hey, it's Black History Month. And, you know, and so that's what internalized racism feels like to me, something that we've taken upon ourselves now. They don't have to tell us, you know, you're not good enough to walk into this store. You're not good enough to succeed. We tell it to ourselves. You know, our parents say it to us, and we say it to our kids. So,
503-231-8187. If you'd like to join the discussion, call in. We'll be here till 7 o'clock. And I'd actually like to have Miriam, a Nubian queen, read some fantastic poetry. She will be performing tomorrow night, 7 p.m., at the Bread and Roses Center, 819 North Killingsworth. Miriam.
Okay. Well, coming out my first chapbook of Miriam, a Nubian queen, I would like to read one of my poems entitled Empty.
Yeah, sorry, listeners, we have a mic that keeps like falling out of place, so I'm just going to adjust it. Sorry, Mary.
Okay. Okay. Nothing accomplished, nothing achieved, nothing earned, nothing lost, nothing gained. Nothing is worth doing when one is not feeling at peace with oneself, yet defeat wins at all expenses.
And that's Miriam, a Nubian queen, and whose influence is actually Maya Angelou. You said,
yes.
You said earlier that you...
I was inspired by her. Matter of fact, I do have the poem that really, really... got me started, and I can read it if you would like. It's about my son, Lotus, and I was so inspired. You know, I was in class one day just sitting down with these ladies and, you know, hearing her do the speech with Clinton and all, and coming across one of her poems and reading her famous one, I Rise, and that really inspired me, and my poem is entitled Lotus Is. Out of sight, the light of my life, his eyes keep me smiling. He makes the days seem shorter. He's amazing. My lotus is my sunshine. When my days look cloudy, his smiles brightens the day. Lotus is my son.
That's a beautiful poem.
Thank you.
Mm. And that poetry poem by Maya Angelou is Still I Rise. And if you go down to the Multnomah County Library, they have audiobooks of that. And you can get that CD or cassette, put it in your car and listen to it. One of the things I hear all often is that we don't get enough education, but we need to educate ourselves and our friends. I want to thank these young women for coming in tonight and helping us get educated.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Uh-huh. Yes. And did you want to share anything else?
Yes, I sure do. I'm coming out of a book called I Hear My Sisters Saying, Poems by 20th Century Women. All sorts of poets in here. You have Sonia Sanchez. You have Audre Lorde. Of course, you have Maya Angelou, you have Nikki Giovanni, and the poem that I'm about to read is called Nikki Rosa. Childhood remembrances are always a drag if you're black. You always remember things like living in Woodlawn with no inside toilet, and if you become famous or something they never talk about, how happy you were to have your mother all to yourself, and how good the water felt when you got your bath from one of those big tubs that folks in Chicago barbecued in. And somehow when you talk about home, it never gets across how much you understood their feelings. As the whole family attended meetings about Holydale, and even though you remember your biography, never understand your father's pain as he sells his stock and another dream goes. And although you're poor, it isn't poverty that concerns you. And though they fought a lot, it isn't your father drinking that makes any difference. But only that everybody is together, and you and your sister have happy birthdays and very good Christmases. And I really hope no white person ever has caused to write about me, because they never understand black love is black wealth, and they'll probably talk about my hard childhood and never understand that all the all the while. I was quite happy.
That's great.
Nikki Rosa by Nikki Giovanni.
And again, Nikki Giovanni, you can also, I've gotten some of her CDs from the library. Just go in and ask the librarian that you want to hear some recorded versions of poetry, and you'll find a great amount of poetry. So when you came across that particular poem, what moved you about that?
Me, as a child, you know, being in a family, a unit like that, and even the poverty or the way that I was brought up, we didn't have much, but the appreciation of just the big Christmases and the nice birthdays, those were the big celebrations. And just knowing that when we didn't have all that we should have had as children, we were quite happy. I was happy. You know, I was happy being around my family, around my cousins, my aunts, my uncles. It was something that I knew that I will remember, you know, until I get older and continue to remember those proud times that we spent together. And Nikki Rose just said a lot about, you know, me being in that area in my life and still remembering those quite happy times.
And Neani Norman, do you want to say a little bit more about people that you've read? I know you had mentioned earlier Ian LaVanzant. I don't have the name right.
Ian LaVanzant.
Mm-hmm.
She is a... I guess she could be, if you go to the library or to Powell's bookstore, she'd be under self-help. But she's a very powerful woman who, she writes about things to help women come out of continuing to struggle and continuing to be less than a woman and embracing your body. And I think that there are a lot of powerful things out there to help women do that, but she is geared specifically towards women of color, and that is something that is very important, because as women of color, we're advertised and marketed as something exotic and, you know, something that men want to see in a sexual manner all the time, and never as, you know, a strong political woman or, you know, a strong poet, or, you know, never as just a strong woman. We always have to be seen as something, you know, ethnic and, you know, fun. So she really does help women become something that they can honor and respect your body and do things that are good for yourself and let people know that you can be an inspirational woman without being something that's marketed. And it's great, I think, for women of color to understand that.
Okay. And we have Lori online, and we're just about to close the show. But Lori, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
Yes, well, I was just, I have a collection of poems of Langston Hughes, which has been a real history. If I was a history teacher, I would take this book and put it in my history class, because it's a collection of his poems. He's a black man. He was born in the 1900s, and his poems span from the 1920s all the way through 1960. So, you know, you have the first poem that is just filled with all hope and, you know, just, you know, a lot of hope of a youthful vision. And then, you know, just life, he has a lot of, you know, the ups and downs, and also dealing with all the Jim Crow and all the racism and hatred. And always throughout, there's always this hope that one day there will be no color line, and that the black and white and yellow and red and all people, all races, will stand together and hold hands and live, you know, live in peace with one another. But it was smelt, you know, and it's sort of like it spans his whole lifetime. And the poems are in chronological order, what is going on during the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. And it's absolutely a treasure. And it's just one of my favorite books. So I just happened to be listening to Bread and Roses, and I thought, wow, this would be a wonderful thing to share to your guests.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you for sharing.
You know, I guess what I think of both for my guests, Neani Norman and Miriam, a Nubian queen, you know, that idea of chronologically recording your thoughts.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
both so articulate. And Miriam, you have wonderful poetry.
Thank you.
So, you know, keeping those poems as you get older and keep on writing and keep on talking.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah. And before we close the show, I mean, is there anything else you want to share? Do you have another poem?
Yes.
And can you read the name of that book again that you have?
It's called I Hear My Sisters Saying, Poems by the 20th Century Women. This one's called Bedtime. We are metal, where the bees hum. Mind and body are almost one. As the fire snaps in the stove and our eyes close. And mouth to mouth, the covers pulled over our shoulders. We drowse as horse afield in a cord. Though the fall, cold, surrounds our warm bed, and though by day we are singular and often lonely.
You know, when you're reading these poems, it just, I've been listening to so much of, George Bush, Dick Cheney, the whole everything. And it just really reminds me how important words are to hear and how it sets you in a different space, definitely.
It does.
That I want to talk about it. I'll be leading the Black National Anthem, speaking of words and how important they are. And I think something that that I notice, you know, in schools and in organizations is, you know, everybody has an anthem and something to be proud of. And, you know, in school, every time there's a football game, basketball game, whatever, they either play a recording of the Star-Spangled Banner, or everybody has to stand up and sing the Star-Spangled Banner, you know, whole hand over your heart, everything. So I think it's definitely important, as coming together as a collective of people of color and African American. And especially in schools where it's predominantly African American youth, to have something that that was written for the purpose and to make you proud of your history and to make you, you know, sing from the depths of your soul for the things that the people who came before you did for you. And I think that is a wonderful place to start. And so I'll be leading that tomorrow.
And that's tomorrow night at the Bread and Roses Center, 819 North Killingsworth. And the Black National Anthem, actually, I just recently read when it was written. It was actually for President Lincoln way back when after the Civil War times. And that's really something to think of, that those words were written then and are still being sung today.
Yeah.
Closing thoughts?
Oh, wow. My closing thoughts are, hey, this is, you're not free until you have the opportunity to grow and blossom. That's just period. Without that, free.
Again, I want to thank my guest, Nubian Queen Miriam, who's got a great chapbook out, and Niani Norman, a youth advocate, and things that she is. And thanks for coming in. This has been Bread and Roses, and I'm Carol Scholl, your host. I'd like to close with some music by Angelique Kidjo, and this is a song called Okan Baile, and I'll read you the translation. I know where I come from you, my family. Let me take a moment to thank you, because you bring me joy and strength. If my moves are full of blessings, it comes from you, my family. That goes out to all my KBOO family. We're a great radio station. Thanks for listening.
giovani feninua e pelue birala olue gia ngogo warinua ya wai fe karupe gia wa mbari ferada momo prefero Mila yo mo fe kiaye